I think we're good.
All right. So, to some extent, it's happened previously, but never like it's happened now. And the reason why we see this reboot phase right now, I think you've got two things that are going on. The first is, everyone is always looking for a built-in audience. And one way to get a built-in audience is to use IP or intellectual property for branded entertainment that people are already familiar with. So I think that's the first thing that's going on. The second thing that's going on, which is probably more critical, is we are being so fractionalized as an audience that we no longer have a mass audience, and everybody wants to find just a little bit of a sliver of an audience. And one way to find a sliver is to appeal to groups that have a track record of making something popular the first time. So as a result, I can give very specific examples. We know that Full House came back as Fuller House. We know that Murphy Brown came back as a reboot of Murphy Brown. We know Will and Grace came back as a reboot of Will and Grace. We know that Frasier is coming back as a reboot of Frasier. And just by sheer happenstance, I'm friends with the creator of Frasier, and he's not involved with the reboot. So, but, you know, Paramount owns the reboot rights, and so he's not involved at all. And it's going to be a new show, but it's still going to have that same character, which is different. So it's not and he's going to move to a new city. But anyway, that's happening. And then it's so popular, the whole concept of a reboot, we now have a comedy show called Reboot.
Yeah, by, what's his name? Steve, Modern Family.
Steve Levitan.
Steve Levitan, thank you.
So, and Steve, and I've got friends who write for that show, and his concept was kind of based on what you're talking about, and that is that this is such a craze, and it's happening all over the place, that it would be something to do meta. And meta television is one of the most, it's a brand of television that is wildly popular. Television about television. And it has existed since television first came on the air.
Bojack Horseman?
Of course. So television about television. So going back in time, like one of the big hits of TV was the Dick Van Dyke Show. And what was the Dick Van Dyke Show? It was about a TV show. And then you can just start thinking about all the shows where the characters of that show work on a television show. And sometimes it's a talk show, sometimes it's comedy, sometimes, or they work in television, sometimes it's news, sometimes it's sports, but it's always TV. Which kind of makes sense because people write what they know. But the point is, this genre is perfect for a reboot period, because now you can make fun of the reboot period. So going back to the question, I think there are two very real reasons. The first is we want built-in audiences, so this is a way to get one. And the second thing is we're so fractionalized that you segment it, that we have to do something. And if I know that in the 1990s, X number of people watched this show, then that's a reason for me to bring it back now. And then the other thing we know, a third thing, is things always become popular in cycles. So whatever was popular when you were a child will be popular when you have children. It will become popular again. And part of that is by design, because we know that parents want to have shared experiences with their children. So if they both can share the same experiences, it's a win-win, and you're more likely to pay attention to it. So I'm not at all surprised that this is happening, and it's going to continue. I see no end in sight of
this.
How
do you see nostalgia sort of as an emotion, as a feeling amongst viewers playing into this and kind of feeding the industry?
Human beings are nostalgic by nature. Our brains do this funny thing where we imagine the past as being more pleasant than it really was. So, but that's kind of just what we do. So we think of things and we're very nostalgic for those things. But when we actually look at those things in retrospect, were kind of like perplexed as to why we felt that way. So if we look through the lens of today and then we look back, we're like, why did I like that? So I can tell you one of the shows that I watched as a kid was called Family Ties. And I loved Family Ties. And it starred Michael J. Fox as this, you know, little teenager. And it's a family-based show. And his father worked for a PBS TV station. And in the show, Michael J. Fox's Alex P. Keaton is the character. And he was a conservative Republican. And everybody else in his family was a very liberal Democrat. And that's where the comedy came from. I thought that show was hilarious. I would have told the whole world this was one of the best shows ever. I watch an episode of that now, today. It is cringeworthy. It is so bad. And but in my mind, nostalgia is like, oh, the 1980s, the late 80s, and I was a little kid, and it was perfect, and this is what I loved. And I think we all go through that. So college students today, if they think back to their childhood, their young childhood, they probably have these nostalgic views of the shows that they watched. But if they went back and watched those shows today, they would say, these aren't good. And I think that's just human nature. We're built to kind of frost over bad things. And so we think everything was better than it really was. And we like it. We like nostalgia. Takes us back to a place and a time where we felt safe and happy. So it makes sense.
Something that I mentioned, or plan to build upon in the article, is sort of just how Gen Z, that's we,
yes,
we, Gen Z, basically at the moment we range from, I would say, around middle schoolers of present day to college age.
Yeah.
That's who we are. And I feel like we are still young and we should still be kind of with the mindset that these are our simpler times, yet a lot of us do kind of feed into that whole nostalgic feeling and kind of looking into the past for the better things.
Yeah.
And just because kind of we're hyper aware of a lot of issues in the world, like, I don't think that there has ever been, well, what do I know? But then I don't think that there has ever been sort of a generation within this age range that it just knows so much, and knows so much, I would say, also in like a negative sense. We know about a lot of awful things in the world. And
there's no doubt this is true, because there's no doubt. We already know that Gen Z is the first generation to grow up 100% with digital media, with being connected 24/7. And we think, well, what's the big deal? Well, it's the first time in human history that's ever happened. So we've gone hundreds of thousands of years and no human has gone through that. And now we have an entire generation. We can assume every human henceforth will have the same experience. That fundamentally changes our outlook.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's no doubt that you have access to more information. And I think that's probably not healthy for a person's well-being, just in general. You know, compare your generation to the generation ahead of you, the millennials. And the millennials, when they were growing up, they would not have been aware of wars outside the United States. They would not have been aware of events in Seoul, Korea, that might lead to stampedes where 153 people die. They wouldn't know these things because they wouldn't have been exposed to them. The only way to have been exposed to them would have been to actively look for newspapers to read about it, or to actively decide to put on the news and to watch it, the national evening news. And we know historically, children don't do that. Children don't do those two things. But today,
Actually, sorry. Go ahead. To cut you in.
You're fine.
I've got a little brother, and he's like, he's not even Gen Z.
If he's young, he's not.
He's about 9 years old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And just know that, like, almost every day, he's always just like, like, the day that the war between Ukraine started,
yeah.
He was the person that let me know that Russia just sent a missile to Ukraine.
I think this is a problem. And this I think going forward, it's over now, in the sense that this age of innocence, we used to call it the age of innocence for children, where they're kind of protected from dangerous news from outside the world, it's gone. And it ended with Gen Z. And then whatever we're calling the next generation, I saw Gen Y, whatever it ends up being called, it's way over for them. If you thought it was over for you, it's over for them by the age of 9, apparently. So I would hope that when you were 9, you weren't paying attention to wars around the globe. But now your 9-year-old brother is, and it's over. And that makes me sad. So in terms of nostalgia for college students, I think college students always thought, always, that wherever they are now, and when they think back to their young childhood, they're nostalgic for that. So I don't think that's changed. But what I do think has changed is access to information. It's just fundamentally changed everything. And I would argue, not for the better. Because the great irony, and this is the part that's frustrating, is the great irony is they're exposed to events, but they are not aware of context. And so they don't have enough lived experience or reading experience to understand the context of everything.
Yeah.
So they know about the event. They know about what's happening, and it's horrible, but they may not know about the Cold War. They may not know about the long-standing fight between the former Soviet Union and the Western world. And so they know about Russia and Ukraine, but they don't know about Gorbachev, and they don't know about Yeltsin, and they don't know how we got to Putin, and they don't know the battles that were taking place between the West and Soviet Union / Russia for the past 60 years. And it's like, so, and I wish we were as good at getting that information out as we are about getting breaking news, here's the event, out.
Yeah.
And it's, by the way, it's not unique to Gen Z. This is just a fundamental problem. People don't read, and they definitely don't read history. When they do read, they're not reading history or political news. Instead, what we do is watch. And we don't watch the things that we probably should watch. We're not watching in-depth, accurate, well-researched documentaries. We're watching TikTok videos. We're watching YouTube shorts. And it's completely different. We're watching Instagram Reels. It's not the same thing as reading, you know, a Pulitzer Prize winning book about the history of Ukraine. Like, we're just not doing that.
No. Okay.
For better or worse. I would argue worse.
Okay. Let's see. With regards to nostalgic media, do you think that we are out of ideas? Do you think that this sort of stifles creativity?
Yes, I really do. I really do. I think it is nearly impossible for somebody to come up with an idea for a story that hasn't already been told. The only thing that we can do is just change some elements of it, but the story itself, everything is derivative of something else, which is why everything seems familiar. I think it's really, really hard to come up with something that we haven't already done. I'm not the only one who thinks that way. Everybody who makes things feels the same way. So there are still stories to be told, no doubt about it. It's just that it's probably not going to be a fresh, original, something you've never seen before. It's going to be something that good story, might be well executed, but it's going to have parts that you recognize from everything else. So I do think it's a real problem, not just in television and movies, but music. Yeah, I mean, it seems to me every new song that somebody comes out with today, they're going to get sued. Someone else claiming they took the music from them. And it's really, really hard. It kind of makes sense. Think of how many words we have and how many different ways can you put in those words and to tell a story, and how many experiences humans have had, and have we told all the... Now, there are mundane stories we haven't told, but have we told all the stories that would attract an audience? Maybe we have. So, I don't know. Will we ever run out of stories? I think one way we don't run out of stories is relying on nostalgia and retelling stories from previous generations. Take the movie A Star Is Born. That movie has now been made 4 times. And every time it's called A Star Is Born.
I did not know that.
And every time they just use a different circumstance. So this version of Star Is Born was with Lady Gaga and, what's his face?
Bradley
Cooper. And, And then we had a previous version that starred Judy Garland. And then we had another version with Barbara Streisand. And so we just find the star of that era, and then we tell the same story. Mm. And then there was the original one, which wasn't any of those three, whose name I don't even remember anymore. And so, but always with the same basic story. And the same basic story is, famous man has some kind of an addiction, meets, plucks from obscurity somebody who's going to be a star. And we've told that story to 4 different generations, and every generation has loved it. We'll tell that story again in 30 years for a 5th generation. And so I don't want to say we're completely out of fresh ideas, but I want to say that we're going to tell the same stories. We're just going to tweak them a little bit. And, you know, Romeo and Juliet, I mentioned this... Right, and now...
we got Gnomeo and Juliet.
Well, now we got Gnomeo and Juliet. And then I don't even know what streaming platform has it, but I think it's called Rosaline. And Rosaline
is on Hulu,
I think. And she's the jilted ex-lover. Right? And so it's still Romeo and Juliet, but now it's told from the point of view of Romeo's ex-girlfriend. And she's none too pleased to learn that he's falling for Juliet. So, but it's the same story. We just tweaked it. And I think that's going to continue forever. I don't think we're going to get fresh original stories anymore, because I don't think they exist. Every novel, every short story, every poem, every TV show script, every movie script, every video game script, every music lyric is derivative of something that somebody else is told. That makes sense, because where do we get our ideas from? We have to get our ideas from our experiences, and our experiences are comprised of day-to-day living, and when we do that, we got to draw them from somewhere. We don't come up with ideas in a vacuum. We see something that reminds us of something. We watch something that we think is cool, and then we kind of mishmash it all together, and then we come up with something. And what we come up with is probably going to be derivative of lots of different things. So, yeah. Avatar is the same story as Ferngully. There's no difference.
I have no idea about that.
Well, now that I told you that, Ferngully was an animated film from the 90s. Tells the exact same story as Avatar. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm guessing James Cameron never saw Ferngully and just told the story. But the story is about a little creature who goes to a new world, and the new world is beautiful and idyllic, and they're big greedy people trying to extract something from the new world for their own benefit, and they're evil. There's nothing original about that story. It's been told 100 million times, but still a good storyline. people should still tell it. It could be called WALL-E. It could be called Avatar. It could be called Fern Gully. It could be called, what's the one with the robot? Oh, God. I can't remember the name. It might even be called Robot. I don't know. But it's all the same story is the point.
Okay. Kind of running out of time, so I'm just going to ask. Your personal views, sort of, on this thing. Do you like the resurgence of this older content? Why
no.
Or why not? What are your favorites?
I don't like it. I am of the belief that if it were up to me, we would never do sequels and we would never do reboots. And the reason why I don't like it is...
Do you think they're ever better than the original?
I have never seen one that is better than the original. That's the problem that I think I have. I thought Full House was a cute family show. I think Fuller House is not good. I thought everything. Maybe that's why I don't like it. Because I never think it's as good as the original. So I'm not. I don't like that at all. I understand why they do it. I understand why it's going to stay. And if I were on that side making those decisions, I would make the same decisions because I would always go for a built-in audience over trying to find a fresh new one. The joke in Hollywood is everyone's in a race to be second. Nobody wants to be first because first is too risky to come up with a new idea. And then once it works, then there's a gold rush to be second because it's often the second show or the second movie that becomes the biggest hit. So you take a TV show like Friends, the concept of Friends, that was the second, that was the gold rush for the second one. The first one was called Living Single, and Living Single had the exact same storyline as Friends. Six friends, three men, three women, living in New York across the hall from each other.
I do think another issue with Living Single could also come from like the racial aspect. 100%.
There's 100% that's accurate. The concept is they made a white version of Living Single and they called it Friends. And by the way, this happens all the time. People will take a story from Korea, Pakistan, Israel, South Africa, the United States, that was intended for a different audience and just repackage it for a mainstream white audience in this country. Happens nonstop. They just want to make money. And if it works, then they're like, oh wow, that worked. Well, let's make it with white affluent people who live in, 2,000 square foot Manhattan apartments for free. Even though they're all unemployed.
Do you think we, as the audience, are ever going to get bored of this sort of thing?
No. I want to believe that we would, but the audience has all the control in this situation. All of it. If we quit watching these reboots and these prequels and these sequels, they would go away tomorrow. But we keep watching them, which is an incentive to keep making them. So the evidence thus far suggests we haven't gotten bored and we're not getting bored. Because if we had already started to get bored, we wouldn't be watching them and then they'd go away. Because the market will respond to our tastes. But the fact that we keep gravitating toward these shows is an indication to me that we're not bored of them. And we're intrigued, like, what are they doing? How did they figure this out? You asked me earlier, what is my favorite? I will tell you, here's an example. I watched Game of Thrones, the first one. And then when I heard that House of the Dragon was coming out, I was intrigued. Because that was one of the best storylines from Game of Thrones. I wanted to see how they're going to deal with that. So I ended up watching it. So there's one I watched.
And you liked it?
I initially did not. But by the end of the first season, I thought it was good. So it, as is often the case.
No.
No. well, it's too early to say. And I didn't like everything about Game of Thrones either. And I went to Game of Thrones really late after it was already a big hit. But I did like Game of Thrones. And I don't think this is as good as Game of Thrones, but maybe it's an unfair comparison after only 10 episodes. But I will say, I thought the last 5 episodes were much better than the first 5, which makes sense because you have to grow into a show. Writers have to, producers have to, directors have to, cinematographers have to, and actors have to. So it makes sense. Anyway, nostalgia is here to stay. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. Reboots are not going to stop. Another practical reason to do reboots is you already own the rights to them, so you don't have to pay extra for it. It saves a lot of money. So if you already own the rights, it guarantees a built-in audience, and the audience doesn't seem to be upset about the concept of a reboot, and they're still willing to watch, then it's a no-brainer as to why they're going to keep making them. Disney has already said they're going to, in effect, reboot every single animated film they've ever made as both a live action and then also as an additional computer CGI. So not always for the big screen, often for the small screen. I don't think Disney tells original stories anymore. They only take things they already own and then just continue that storyline. So
you just said something about studios creating nostalgic content so long as it kind of doesn't upset the pre-existing audience. And like, I just thought, like, it's actually really interesting how I feel like on a more surface level this sort of content does get a bad rap. Like, if a lot of people would say that, yeah, I hated that they made a reboot of this, or
they ruined the show, but they watch it.
They ruined the show by making the prequel. They ruined the show by doing the spinoff. And yet, it's still happening, of course, because people are watching.
They can say whatever they want. but the evidence suggests they're still watching. and that they, if you don't like it, why are you watching it?
Maybe because there's nothing else. Maybe because that's...
No, that is not a good argument. In 2022, you can't say there's nothing else, because I used to pride myself. I would tell students all the time, I have watched at least one episode of everything that's ever been on television, is what I used to say. It was easy to do because you only had 4 major networks, and then you had cable, and cable mostly wasn't doing original programming. And you don't have to watch the series, you just watch the pilot episode. So at one certain time of the month, or one certain month of the year, usually September, the broadcast networks would debut their new shows, and the cable networks would debut their new shows in October. And so you would get the list from, like, say, Hollywood Reporter or Variety, here are all the new shows coming in broadcast TV this fall. So then I would just record all of them. And then here are all the new shows on cable coming in October. I would record them, and I would just watch. And it adds up to, like, you know, in 1 year, it would be like 30 to 40 new shows. Half of them are half-hour shows. So it ends up being, if you just watch 1 or 2 shows a day for a week or two, you've watched all the shows for that new year. You do that once a year, and then you've seen every single show, right? I used to pride myself on that. That is mathematically impossible to do. You can start watching television today, and you don't have enough time in your life to watch even one episode of everything that's been made. Not even one episode. Forget about, like, a whole season or the whole series. It's impossible. Even people whose job it is to watch nonstop, full time, and write about it, will only now end up seeing a sliver of what's available. So there's so much out there, and so much of it is so good that most people will never watch it, and they'll never find it. And if it doesn't spread through word of mouth or through lots of media coverage, then we don't find it, because it's so hard to find today. But you know what we will find instantly? A remake or a reboot of something we already know. So it's just hard. But there's so much. There's just so much. It's just crazy. And I'm not even just talking about the United States, but then you can go, we have countries with developed TV systems. There's like a dozen in the world. So there's the US, and then in Europe, you've got pretty much all of Western Europe. They all have their own. And then you've got Israel that has one. You've got South Africa that has one. You have Nigeria that has one. You've got India that has one. You've got Korea that has one. You've got China that has one. You've got all these countries, Australia, New Zealand, with their own sophisticated television systems, and they're all making content that is now distributed globally, just like American shows. So we don't even have enough time to watch American shows, but then you can watch all the Spanish shows, all the Mexican shows, and there are so many. It just, there's so much good stuff out there. Yeah. And people, I don't know, because of the language stuff. One of my favorite shows is an Australian show. It's called Upper Middle Bogan. I love it. It's great.
So, it's in English.
It's in English. Exactly. The Americans tend to like the shows, although I do like Korean stuff, but only in subtitles. Like, I don't like the dubbing.
Dramas?
I have watched some of the Korean dramas.
I like Squid Game.
Oh, I definitely love Squid Game.
Because K-dramas and Squid Game kind of fall into different categories.
Those are two different things. So, and then, of course, there's anime, which is wildly popular,
yeah,
mostly from Japan, and wildly popular here, and growing. Netflix is now doing an entire sub-network just of anime programs.
Yeah.
So there's so much out there, and so much of it is so good. This is the best time in the history of the world to be in love with media. Because you literally have at your fingertips, you can watch any hit show from planet Earth, if you're willing to pay a few bucks a month.
Yeah.
So it's not for free. But anyway, now I think it's here to stay. Nostalgia is here forever. Reboots are here forever. Unless we stop watching them.
Which you don't think is going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. The reason why I don't think it's going to happen is because I feel like if it were to happen, it would have already happened. But it hasn't. But we've been doing this for a long time now. So it's not like we just got our first reboot. Like, we keep it started off, I wonder if people will watch. It's like, oh, they watched. Really? I wonder if they'll watch more than one. Oh, boom, boom, boom. It's like a bag of microwave popcorn when it's near the end. Or when it's at the beginning, it starts popping. First it goes pop, pop, and then pop, pop. And now it's going pop, 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 pop. And that's where we are. Now the question is, will it keep going pop, 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 pop? Or will we hit the point where it starts to slow down and goes pop, pop? I don't know. Right now, we're in the pop, 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 pop.
I was going to say that, we can't keep making remakes of remakes, but then I randomly thought about, Star Wars, and that is a franchise that has
made remakes,
a million iterations, and, yeah, it's possible, you know? We have done it, so...
Star Wars has... that you have the films, and now the films are making remakes of the films, and then you have the animated series, which they've redone that, and now you got the CGI animated series, and then you have The Mandalorian, and then you've got it's just crazy.
It's a lot.
Are you a Star Wars fan?
No, I know
not. I am not at all.
I just know that there's a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. There's so much content. Yeah, I just don't see it going away anytime soon. And I get your point that eventually you can't make copies of copies.
Yeah.
But there's so much content. How long away are we from that? Because it's not like we're not also creating new things. It's just that we're doing both simultaneously.
Yeah.
So the new things that we're making, anything that will be popular there, will then capitalize on that. But I do fear, you know, we see it already. We used to want to create a franchise. Not anymore. Now we want to create a universe. So, and the universe is not just a franchise, it's a universe. So we now have a Marvel Cinematic Universe, we have a DC Universe, we have a Game of Thrones Universe, so we create these universes where there's no end in sight for what you can do with them. And I hope we don't get to the point where we just have a Star Wars Universe, a Lord of the Rings Universe, you know, a Muppet Universe. And so we just have all these universes and that's all we have. I don't want that ever. I like films that, and TV shows that cover different things. Like that talk, and that they're about relationships, and I don't know. It's the best time for content, but it's also the worst time for content. It's like simultaneous. You got all this wonderful stuff, and then you got all this crap, and it's all there. And you gotta kind of find the good stuff inside of mixed, because it's all mixed together. It's sort of like you mix together this big salad, and the only thing you like in the salad are the carrots. And so you're going in there and you gotta like take out the tiny little bits of carrots, but you don't like any of the other stuff.
You're good with analogies.
It's just hard.
I think I am done.
Yeah, I know we talked a lot. Sorry.
No, it's nice.